As I've said, Goody was already a well-established performer in Paris during the 30s. He was among the headliners at concerts when Django was being introduced. And Reinhardt was on several of his records, including Goody's first, under his own name. They became friends and associates, sharing many late-night jam sessions, and the legendary Gypsy was simply one of a kind and a force of nature.
He always wants to be playing, even when everybody else is falling out. We would have one job, 6 to midnight, another 2 to 6 in the morning. Then these cafes where you play in the morning for people who don't want to go home yet. 3 jobs, 1 day. That was enough for me.
Later in California, Django was one of the few subjects Frank would discuss.
I would go home and sleep, but many times Django comes 10, 11 in the morning, hits on my window. Goody, old man, come on, you can sleep tomorrow. Always some little place he wanted to go, a little out of town, some cafe, some little kind of place.
In his memoir, trombone player Jim Lee relayed Frank's comments about the guitarist's compulsive desire to play endlessly after long trips away visiting his gypsy kin.
You better hide your head. Go sleep at some woman's place. Stay out of his way so he didn't keep you going 3-4 days, no stopping. The man will drive you to play, you understand?
Bit of swing guitars, Frank Big Boy Goody, tenor sax with trumpeter Bill Coleman, and Django guitar. This is Discovering Frank Big Boy Goody on Jazz Rhythm. I'm Dave Radlauer. Thanks for joining me. In 1938 and 39, Goody was teamed up with the fabulous Argentine guitarist Oscar Alemán and playing at a Paris club called Le Chantilly. Because Alemán's style superficially resembled Django's, he became a minor sensation in Paris. Oscar was a brilliant virtuoso and jazz innovator. And though Oscar recorded on the swing label with Django and many of the same musicians as Goody, they made no discs together. Alemán later became one of the biggest stars of Argentine music. Oscar and Big Boy both left France for Argentina about the same time, in late 1939. It was a smart move. The couple dozen African-American jazz musicians who remained too long in Europe had serious problems, and several suffered imprisonment by the Germans, including Arthur Briggs, Valeta Snow, Freddie Johnson, and others. Until now, it's been awfully hard to find out much about Goody's half-decade in South America, but Big Boy flourished in the sunny Latin climate. And what we know for sure is that he moved from Argentina to Brazil, and by about 1944, was well-established in Rio. He was playing samba and samba swing, deeply engaged with the Brazilian music scene, mentoring some of the local talent, and he even owned a nightclub. Frank reinvented his style again, and once again worked his way to the center of musical action, and put himself in the employ of a successful impresario bandleader, meanwhile maintaining his independence as a musician and freelancer. All in all, he prospered and seems to have thoroughly enjoyed life in Brazil.
It took a couple of years to really learn the samba rhythms, but it was worth it. Playing Brazilian music has helped me a lot.
And by 1944, Frank was married to an Argentine woman, though we know nothing about her. And though I doubt Big Boy ever lacked for female companionship, this is at least one instance when he established a significant and stable relationship. He typically reduced his description to Jim Lee of what must have been a major enterprise on his part to simply saying that, together, he and his wife had owned a little, what he called cabaret for dancing, what we'd call a nightclub. Apparently, he supplied the music for dancing and she ran the business. Fortunately, we have an eyewitness view of Goody in Rio thanks to Richard Hadlock. In his mid-teens, his father was an executive for RCA Victor in Brazil. And in the 40s, they lived in the swank beachside resort known as the Copacabana, a famous strip of beach that was synonymous with and anchored by Copacabana Palace Hotel.
The Copacabana Hotel, which is a block from our apartment building, and the hotel was upscale. Had a huge casino. It was one of three casinos in Rio with international gamblers would assemble there, and like Monte Carlo or something, you know, it was a biggie.
And Goody was also performing at the Copacabana Hotel with the samba swing band Aristide Zacharias. We're hearing records by the Aristide Zacharias Orchestra, even though Goody's not on them that we know of. It was a large Latin dance orchestra of five brass, five reeds, and four rhythm instruments, and had toured widely in South America and whacked some of the biggest hits of Brazilian music. Hadlock is now an accomplished jazz writer and broadcaster.
And I was taking lessons from Zacharias. He was a masterful saxophone player. So he wanted the saxes to be good. And he wrote tough parts for them and for himself. He did invite me to a couple of his rehearsals at the Copacabana. Not much of a jazz man, as it turns out. He was kind of a little too stiff, you know. And that's how I happened to notice this very tall tenor man, and who was obviously of African origin, and asked somebody about it, said, "Oh, that's Big Boy. And he came from Europe after the war started." That's all I knew. I didn't know his name was Goody. If Jimmy Dorsey didn't play a lot of jazz, he was more of that kind of a leader, featuring his clarinet and his alto. So Goody would have had a fairly limited number of solos because Zach is up front with a saxophone. How many tenor solos are you going to give out? You know, not many.
Nonetheless, Hadlock firmly believes that Goody was recording in Rio. And he should know, his dad was a big wheel in the headquarters of RCA's Brazilian operations. But no recordings of Big Boy from South America have yet surfaced, even among collectors of Brazilian music. Like Tony Baldwin, the kind gentleman who sent me these sides. The 1943 Morena Boca de Oro shows off the band's powerful brass and reed sections. Though Richard didn't think to introduce himself to Big Boy, he took note of his nearby French restaurant. Hadlock is certain this is not the same as the nightclub.
There wouldn't be any dancing. That cafe wasn't much bigger than the room you're sitting in. This little room would have no room for a band, I don't think. Yeah, this was a real tiny space on a corner. Well, it was the street right behind our apartment building, so it was a block away. On the ground floor, the lower window sill would be maybe waist high to me. I would look in and see all these tables lined up for the evening, but nobody there yet, probably. And red checkered tablecloths. It just looked like a little set for a movie in Paris or something, you know. I don't think you could have put a band in there without taking all the tables out.
Though he had done very well in South America, establishing roots, marrying and starting businesses, Goody was back in Paris by 1946. And a decade later, living on separate continents, his erstwhile spouse somehow managed to cut him out of the deal. And Frank somehow lost his share of ownership in the nightclub and presumably his ties to Latin America. This is Discovering Frank Big Boy Goody on the award-winning Jazz Rhythm. I'm Dave Radlauer. Thanks for being with me. Soon upon his return, Goody was again performing and recording. He made a series of trio records with an American piano player named Dizzy Lewis, who must have been a pretty big deal because he'd been playing piano in France since the 20s. What's intriguing is that it sounds like Big Boy's been listening to saxophonists other than Coleman Hawkins, maybe Lester Young. In Europe after the war, Goody was also working with a couple of trumpet-playing band leaders, Harry Cooper and his old friend Arthur Briggs. But by 1948-49, Big Boy was in Switzerland, where he was very popular at a club called the Chiquito in Bern. Initially, he was playing there in a sextet with alto saxophone player Glenn Paquet, and that must have been some band. Paquet was a fine, Missouri-born clarinet and alto sax player who'd toured, gigged, or recorded with King Oliver, Jelly Roll Morton, and Benny Carter before heading to Europe in 1937. He'd settled in Switzerland, kept a band going during the war, and never left. But I suspect something else was going on, like drugs or alcohol problems, because Paquet died just a few years later in his mid-40s. Meanwhile, during the Paris Jazz Festival of 1949, Big Boy was delegated to approach trumpet player Bill Coleman about a new band.
Jazz was jumping in Paris that week. All the jazz clubs were flourishing. All the musicians would go jamming after the nightly concerts.
In his memoir, Coleman explained the series of events, initiated in part by Goody, that resulted in launching his first band.
Big Boy Goody came to my hotel with two friends from Switzerland, advising the owner of the place in Bern called the Chiquito. He wanted me to form an orchestra, and Big Boy was helping to push me by telling me how nice it was to work at the Chiquito, because he had already played there.
As it turned out, the opening in late November was rushed. Coleman was not satisfied with his band or musicians and lacked needed arrangements.
Although we had no music on the stands, we still made a hit with the public at the Chiquito.
Big Boy was there in the band, offering moral support and wise counsel, and Bill made the best of it. The gig in Switzerland lasted about 6 months.
There was a lot of coming and going of well-known American jazz musicians in Switzerland, and a lot of them used to come to the Chiquito for a drink. They often joined us for a jam, as was the case with Willie the Lion Smith, Buck Clayton, and Glenn Paquet. The public was warm, receptive, and enthusiastic, and the club was jumping most of the time.
After that, Goody and Coleman buddied up, working, traveling, and gigging together, but they made no records in the post-war years. Instead, let's hear him in another one of the 1937 recordings with Django Reinhardt. On Baby, Won't You Please Come Home, Christian Wagner sounds great on clarinet and alto. Goody's playing only tenor saxophone. After the Chiquito, in the spring of 1950, Goody and Coleman were off to play jazz in Rome, Italy. And even though the planned gig folded quickly, they again made the best of it. Big Boy did very well in the Italian capital. He performed for a while with a band from Martinique. And he joined Bill Coleman in a concert with the Roman New Orleans Jazz Band, sponsored by the Hot Club of Rome. Coleman returned to Paris and a very successful career in France for the rest of his life. Later in 1950,
toward the end of the summer season, a couple of my musicians went to Germany to join Bass Hill, who was playing in Berlin at the Nazir Bar. Eventually, Big Boy Goody stayed there for years.
I've yet to locate any details of Goody or his recordings made in Germany or Yugoslavia in the early 50s. And to tell you the truth, his trail sort of goes cold until he moves to San Francisco in 1956. Fortunately, the next program brings that era into sharp focus with rare live recordings and recollections of musicians who knew him. Today, there's a new page in the history of jazz, and it's labeled Frank Big Boy Goody. This series and related web pages aim to establish this artist's rightful place in the annals of jazz. And the biography being written promises further illumination. We're still just discovering the full scope of his music, talents, travels, and colorful life. You've heard the words of Frank Goody and his contemporaries read this hour by Mr. Kenneth Gant. The sources were Bill Coleman's autobiography, Trumpet Story, first published in 1981, Jim Lee's self-published memoir, Heaven on the Side, Jazz Away from Home, 1979, by Chris Goddard, and special thanks to Richard Hadlock for both his long-out-of-print 1963 profile from the San Francisco Examiner and his priceless recollection of Goody in Rio. Frank Goody might not have been a radical innovator, but he did have impressive chops on three horns and a voice all his own. He was a master musician who never ceased developing his craft. Reinventing his music several times over, he not only reflected but lived the evolution of jazz itself from 1915 to 64. He was a participant in early New Orleans jazz, the introduction of swing, the fusion of jazz with Latin music, and its recapitulation in the New Orleans revival. Big Boy took it all in stride, wailing away with the best of them, making the tumult that was jazz in the first half of the 20th century. All the music selections were recorded in or near Paris, or Rio, between 1923 and 49. And are available for streaming on demand at the Jazz Rhythm website, where you'll also find a chronology of his life and travels, interview clips of musicians who knew him, at jazzhot, big step, that's all one word, jazzhotbigstep.com. Thanks also to Joanne Fish for reading and assistance, and to record collectors Tony Baldwin, Bo Sherman, Guren Sodervall, and Runes Jorgen. Finally, here's Big Boy playing tenor and leading his 1939 recording band. The personnel were Andre Ekion, alto, and Americans Joe Turner, piano, Jack Butler, trumpet, bass player Wilson Myers, and Tommy Benford, drums. Best known for Satchmo's scattered version in the 20s, BBGB's was a good choice for Goody's hot little 1939 recording band. That's Discovering Frank Big Boy Goody in Paris and Rio on Jazz Rhythm. I'm Dave Radlauer. Thanks for listening.